This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct. I'm Don LaGreca. Wednesday means Leah Hextall, and it's been a while since we've talked. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to yourself. Welcome to the new decade.
Yeah. I still doesn't feel like that to me, you know, because if you're a certain age, there was the 70s, the 80s, the 90s. Those felt like decades. I have really felt decades since the 2000s. Have you?
Yes, I haven't really. I agree with you. It doesn't really feel like it's anything big, you know. And sometimes I wish I could go back to the 90s because I was a lot younger back then.
Yeah, but you wish you could take what you know with you to
exactly.
The younger self, and then that'd be perfect. But that's just not allowed to happen. You know, we're based out of here in New York, and there was a lot of buzz last night at the Garden for the Rangers and the Avalanche, and for good reason. You know, since the Rangers had that letter to their fans, February of 2018. Fans have been anticipating these young crop of players. They didn't know at the time they were going to get Kaapo Kakko, and they did. And there was a buzz on opening night when he made his debut. And Shesterkin last night, boy, the building had a lot of energy for a team that's out of the playoffs, had lost three straight games. And I thought he played well. He's got a tremendous glove hand. He's a great stick handler. In the early portion of the game, Leo, where he had given up two goals on the first three shots, not his fault, but still an overwhelming moment. And he said his hands were shaking when the game started. Bang, he had like a 70-foot pass to Buchnevich out of the crease. So you see with the talents there. He's 24, so he's not like a young kid like Carter Hart. So he's been around a little bit before making his NHL debut. But I think what I saw last night was a kid that can really be a special player in this league.
Igor Shesterkin, am I saying that correct?
Because as of now, until we're corrected otherwise.
Exactly. That might be a name that we all need to remember. I think, Don, you know, what impressed me so much was just exactly what you mentioned. I mean, you come in, you're facing a game, a team against Colorado. And I know that just here in Winnipeg, we see a lot of the Western Conference. I've seen Colorado just recently. They've played the Jets several times. And the fact is that I've been told by the Winnipeg Jets coaching staff that Colorado and St. Louis are the best teams in the league, just that they play. So Colorado comes in there. They go up the two goals. He's shaken a little bit at the beginning, but just the way that he rebounded. And I think for New York Rangers fans, that's got to be the most exciting thing about this. The fact that he is 24, I mean, that's not, you know, people would look at that and say, well, he's 24. He's a little bit older. As you mentioned, he's been around. But for a goaltender, as we know, Don, they take a little bit longer to season. And I think this is actually a great thing that he's not really, you know, getting into the mix until he's a little bit older, has that experience under him, and he can come into a place, you know, come on now. MSG is one of the biggest stages, not only just in hockey, but in the world. And to come in and play in front of that crowd against a team like Colorado, even if they have been a little shaky as of late, that's just a huge victory for him. And really nice to see. And what about how bright, along with Georgiev, how bright the future in net is for the Rangers when the King decides maybe it's time to hang them up?
Yeah, see, that's the dilemma, though, Leah, is I'm not sure Georgiev is going to be able to survive this because of Hank's contract, because he has a no-movement clause. You can't carry three goaltenders forever. I think they can do it for maybe up until this trading deadline. But the inability to move Hank, and I think they're going to be forced to trade Georgiev at the deadline. I really do. I don't think it'd be fair to send him down because he deserves to be up here. Shesterkin is somebody that has shown he deserves to be up here. He was tremendous in Hartford. Plus, the Rangers don't want to run the risk of Shesterkin going back to Hartford and saying, I've got a clause in my contract that allows me to go to the KHL or another European league, and then he gets lost. So I'm just wondering, does Georgiev end up being the odd man out sooner than later, and most likely at the deadline at the latest?
The only thing about this is that's the crux of it, is the fact with Lundqvist's contract. And, I mean, we're talking about, if I'm not mistaken, Henrik is 37 years of age. There is going to be an end to this, no matter how incredible this run has been. It's coming, and it's got to come soon. And the Rangers, it's going to be a very difficult decision because, as we've seen in the NHL, you need that tandem of goalies. You need that backup. It is now a league of where your backups need to be pretty much the ability to be a starter because the load management that we're seeing within goaltenders. And my fear is that if the Rangers, you know, these two goaltenders, yes, they've come up, yes, they've done well in the leagues they've played, but they haven't proven that they're starters. And to just say, well, we'll get rid of this one, then the other one, is that the right decision? It just seems to me, I almost feel for the Rangers right now because it does seem like they're going to have to pull the trigger on a decision, and it's a decision that doesn't have enough background yet to really, in the NHL, to really make that decision about who you may let go compared to others and how that will end up playing out in the future.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. And they still, you know, you look at the standings, Leah, and I don't think they're a playoff team because they hit the halfway mark after losing to Vancouver on Saturday. So they extrapolate out to having 84 points. That's not going to be nearly enough to make the playoffs. But you take a look at the Eastern Conference standings, and they right now sit with 44 points. And the last wild card, let me just punch the wild card up here, belongs. It's a tie with it's Philadelphia with 50. So you're 6 points out of a playoff spot. So they don't want to rule it out. But I don't think they're a playoff team. I think they're going to be a seller at the deadline. I think Chris Kreider's probably going to be gone at the deadline. So, you know, we'll see how they decide to play it out. But this is the time, I think, where you want a Shesterkin to play, but play a bunch of games so that when this team's ready to compete next year, he can really legitimately battle to be the number one goaltender. Hank will have another year left on his contract, and maybe he can be the tutor to Shesterkin for next year. And the way things are in the NHL now, backup goaltenders sometimes play 20, 25 games, sometimes 30. Depending on the team they're playing on. So maybe that's the way the Rangers will kind of look at this moving forward, is that Hank will be the tutor and then he becomes a free agent at the end of next year and then can decide whether he wants to retire or move on to another team.
I think that's the best way to do it, and I honestly think that might be the only, you know, realistic way that they can. But if they are not going to be a playoff team, and I would agree with you, Don, I mean, it's amazing how we're sitting here in January before the All-Star break. It used to, you know, you think back to the day where teams still had the ability, even in February, to make a move. But now, when you look at the standings, we can already really identify a lot of teams that are going to be sellers at the deadline already, which is an interesting concept which always hasn't been around in the NHL.
Now let's go to Montreal. They lost again last night. This is their second 6-plus losing streak of the season. They're lucky to be in the division that they're in, so they're still mathematically alive. But it's starting to fade pretty fast here. How much fault that lies at the feet of Bergevin? They haven't had great drafts. The players that they did draft well, they ended up trading away. Where do you stand right now on how they're run and how much longer Bergevin's going to get a chance to run this thing?
Well, up here in Canada right now, people have called it. The loss to Detroit the other night, and it's official, the Montreal Canadiens are done for this season. That's what's going on here in Canada, and it looks to me that it seems to be the fact that they are going to be sellers because, you know, they've had so many injuries. They have 4 of their top 9 forwards that are out right now with injury. You're not going to rebound like that, and they needed Carey Price to have a Vezina-like season, which they never did. So when you look at Marc Bergevin, a lot of people are sitting here wondering, okay, well, when are we going to see the door open and players start to move? And they do have some key names in Thomas Tatar and Jeff Petrie that they could push out the door and receive some great assets for. But you have to wonder, is Marc Bergevin allowed to start doing that, because is his future going to be right in Montreal? They've given him a lot of rope over the years. You know, there's been times where, you know, he even said he would, you know, step aside, and they said, no, you're not going to step aside, just a few years back. So they, you know, the Molson family, they really have a lot of faith in Marc Bergevin, but when does the time come up that it's time to make the change? Because it's not going to be in Claude Julien. This is not a Claude Julien issue. This is what the team and the underachievement that has occurred. But they really have been dealt a poor hand with injuries, but so has Pittsburgh. And look what Pittsburgh's doing. So what's going on in Montreal? And, you know, quite frankly, you cannot, in that market, in the Bell Center, with that fan base of the most historic franchise within the 31-team league, this mediocrity cannot continue in Montreal, and I think it is going to be Bergevin who will be shown the door. Wait. So it will be interesting to see what happens at the deadline, because I think that will tell us his future.
And you make a great point. If you're on the fence about him, you cannot allow him to make these moves at the deadline, because if you're not all on board with him, then why would you have him make these significant moves in what looks to be the start of a rebuild here? So I don't know who the candidates could be. One of the highlights of my career, I was early on when I was doing the Ranger games, I was invited to this really cool dinner that they had up in Toronto, and Glenn Sather was there, and Jim Schoenfeld was there, Joe Micheletti, Sam Rosen, John Giannone. It was like a eclectic, John Shannon. So it was like a lot of great people that I got to know. And Glenn Sather, and this is going back 8-10 years ago, and Sather just threw out to the room who should be the next general manager of the Montreal Canadiens. And this is before Bergevin was hired. And so people went around the room. They threw out, you know, Patrick Waugh, like different names they got thrown out there. And now that we're getting to that point again, I mean, who are some of the names? And the name that I threw out, and I actually impressed some people because I know him. He's worked with Toronto and Tampa, played for the Devils, so I got to know him when he was a Devil player. It was Claude Loisel. And he's French-Canadian. So I don't know if that's somebody that they would try to give it to. Would they want to go more high profile? Would they, you know, ask, you know, somebody of significance to take over that job? But I think you got to do it sooner than later. Whoever that name may be, I think the search has to begin now.
And I think what people have to understand, and this is really important, is when you talk about it being a French Canadian, that is very important in Montreal, that whoever works for them, especially in those high level jobs, is fluent. They don't maybe necessarily need to be French Canadian, but they definitely need to speak French. I know just personally, I know someone who was trying to be a general manager in this league, and, you know, my cousin Rana, when the, you know, job came open prior to that, he had interest in it. And one of the key components is, do you speak French? And because you have to deal with the media there every single day, and it is a French first speaking community. So it does rule out a lot of candidates. And if people don't think that comes into play, they're wrong.
Does Ron speak French?
No, like, you know, just like enough to kind of get by. But, you know, he said that from the beginning. He thought, you know, I don't even think they spoke to him about it. And he was excited about it because, I mean, this is one of the greatest franchises in history, if not. And but he said, you know, I don't speak French. And so that he just felt that there was no hope that he would get in because of it.
And that really pigeonholes them, doesn't it? Like, you think about it, you know, it reduces the candidates probably by, you know, less, more than half, probably by 3/4. I mean, how many great executives can speak fluently in French? I thought maybe that started to change because their last few captains have not been French. You know, you go back to Saku Koivu, and then obviously with Brian Gianta and Max Pacioretty.
Yeah,
you know that maybe it was. But I guess at that level, can you afford a coach or a general manager to not speak French?
You can't. And it's just the way that if you are there covering the team, the French media is the first place media. RDS, you know, is the main rights holder there. You have to be able to speak in French. And it's not just the players. It's that if I wanted to get a job in Montreal, I would have issue because I need to be able to be fluent in French. It is all around you. And it's not just that. When you go out to represent the team, the community speaks French. That's what they do. Montreal, you know, it's, everybody speaks English as well, but it is a French-first community. They have a wonderful culture there. It's a beautiful city, and it really does mean a lot. I know, you know, speaking to Mike Keane, who used to be the captain of the Canadiens before they, you know, went out and he went to Colorado, but he learned French when he was there, when he was the captain, and he had to learn French. They said to him, if we're going to give you the C, you got to learn it. And he spent a summer learning because he was expected to answer his media questions a la Francais.
Yeah, and I think that's important, but it definitely you know, reduces the selection process for sure. Sticking in the Eastern Conference, I felt like this was going to happen, and it looks like it is with Tampa. Like, you saw what happened last year. They run right through the regular season, one of the great regular seasons we've seen in a long time, get swept in the first round. I felt like, all right, they're not going to take the regular season as seriously. They probably won't finish as high, but they're going to be just as dangerous. And now here they sit, 8 straight wins. They're right now in second place in the Atlantic Division. If I had to pick right now, I might pick Tampa to come out of the Eastern Conference. I think this team could be every bit as good as they were last year, and I think are going to be exceptionally dangerous in the second half.
So you're thinking they were just sandbagging in the first half because they learned from last season? Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. I wouldn't go with that. No, but I do think it's just like, how do you ratchet it up, right? You just had this great regular season. You get swept, and now you got to start all over again. And I would think that would be almost as much a hangover as the team that wins the cup, right? Like how do you take this seriously? How do you take October and November seriously when you're the best team in the league? They knew that they were, that they're that good. And then they got Victor Hedman healthy, which I think was a problem last year against Columbus because he wasn't healthy. And now they're getting stronger, and they're not relying on just Kucherov. Everybody seems to be scoring on that team. Tell me I'm wrong. Tell me that this, that you feel like at the way they're playing right now, that there is a team that you feel confident can beat them in a seven-game series.
No, I would agree with you. I mean, it's just like last year. You looked at them and you thought that they were just going to, you know, roll through, not necessarily roll through because nobody really rolls through the playoffs, but you thought that they were going to go the distance because of how talented they are, and they still got that same group. To your point, Hedman is now healthy. They're getting contributions up and down their lineup. They are offensively just a machine, and they're scary, but I actually do think that they, I won't use the word sandbag, but I think to your point is that they realize, listen, it doesn't matter if we're the President's Trophies winner and we have, you know, 100 and some points in the regular season, if that's what's going to happen in the playoffs. They looked at the first 2 months as they're going to go, they're going to play, they're working on their game. And now, you know, when you listen to Braden Point speak last night after the Vancouver game, he said, our whole focus is on closing out games. We have enough talent to always be in the mix. We have enough talent to score goals, you know, up and down our lineup. But it's that closing out the game. And that may be the biggest lesson they took from being swept in the playoffs, is that you can have all the talent in the world, but if you are a closer, you're not going to get there. And I think that it's that mentality flip in the whole team which will definitely propel them, to your point, to very likely come out of the East. Because I agree with you. I mean, listen, I still think people are just sleeping on Washington. I mean, they continue just to get it done.
Yeah.
You know, Ovechkin last night, you know, tying Timo Solani for 11th all-time on the goals list in the NHL. I mean, he's probably going to pass Mario Lemieux and a few others by the end of the season. I mean, they are getting it done. And they also, I think, know that, you know, with Braden Holtby and some other contracts coming up, that this might be a little bit of the last hurrah with that group. And I think that they're going to be a team in the East that also has done it. And they play a heavy style in the East. And I could see them giving Tampa some grief as well.
Oh, I think it's going to be wide open. And let's not forget about Boston. Boston is still an outstanding team. And the Islanders, you know, the Islanders are doing it with structure, right? I mean, that's a team you could just tell that they're system-oriented with Barry Trotz and Lou Lamoriello. And you saw what they did to Colorado, shutting them out the other night when they came in the highest-scoring team in the NHL. I do think they're short a scorer. But I do think Lou will do something at the deadline. But I don't think we should discount the Islanders. Their goaltending has been outstanding, and they just do not give up goals.
I was just about to say, like, what I love about the Islanders is they're scrappy. They don't stop. They, you know, they can be down a few goals, and they just got that resilient attitude. And I do think that that's a tone from the top, as you mentioned, Lamoriello and Trotz. I have all day for those two. I mean, I think they're just a wicked combination together and set the tone for this team. But I agree with you, though. I think that they have to do something at the deadline, and there's going to be opportunities for them, too. I mean, you look at, you know, the LA Kings even. They're going to be selling. There's some players out there that could put in, you know, perennial 20-goal scorers, like perhaps a Tyler Toffoli that you could step in there and pop down lower in your lineup. And you got scores like that in your bottom six, and away you go. But I agree with you. I think they need a little bit more offense if they're going to, you know, make more of a push.
All right, Nashville parts ways with Peter Laviolette. And I like Peter. I got to know Peter when he was the coach of the Islanders. And I did some NHL Lives with him back in the day when he was between the Islander job and the Carolina job. This guy's been a winner. Three straight playoff appearances with the Islanders when that was considered unheard of. Cup in Carolina, final in Philadelphia, final in Nashville. But, Leah, if there's ever been a coach that you can stamp an expiration date on, it's Peter. All right? He just eventually runs his course. I like John Hines. I'm not really sure that that's necessarily an improvement, and we'll see. They lost last night. They got a tough schedule coming up. But were you surprised at all in somebody that was still a believer in Nashville before the new year that they let go of Peter the way they did?
I really don't think that David Poile wanted to do this. You can see from his background that he's not into letting go coaches.
Well, that's for sure.
You know, Hines becomes the third coach in the franchise history after Trotz was there for about 17 seasons. But the thing about Laviolette is that there are certain closers for certain times for teams. And Nashville's the type of team that is built to win right now. Their window is open and they're underachieving. And Laviolette is a closer. There's a reason that he's been to the finals that he's been to. And the reason being is that teams bring him in when it's not time to develop anymore. It's time to get things done. And that's why I was a little concerned about what I was hearing from David Poile yesterday in his press conference about John Hines. He was talking about the fact that, you know, Nico Hischier and Kyle Palmieri and Taylor Hall, they've all had, you know, development and career years when Hines has coached them. And that is true, and that's great for development, but I don't think that's what Nashville necessarily is looking to. And I think John Hines is a very smart coach. I just don't know if that's the coach for now. And I was honestly shocked when I saw that he got hired. I mean, you know, he gets released in December by New Jersey, and already he's back in the market. I mean, that obviously leads to people thinking very highly of him. He is a bright young coach, but I was a little shocked by that. I thought that maybe they may take some time, but this is a club who still thinks they can make the playoffs, and they still could, but they've got to act, and they've got to act now. And to your point, their schedule does not get any easier. And what concerns me is that Roman Josi, you know, they've got a defenseman first in team scoring by 15 points while they have all these underachieving forwards. And if they don't get that forward core going, they've got no shot.
Yeah. And Pekka has not been himself. And that makes it really difficult when your elite goaltender is not elite. And we'll see if he turns out to be that goaltender. The combination of him and Soros can carry this team in the second half if they're going to continue to underachieve offensively. Kudos to Arizona, right? There they sit. We know our team almost made the playoffs last year. They got off to a pretty decent start. They're sitting up on top of this Pacific Division. Now it's still wide open. Vegas has 54 points. Edmonton's right there with 51 points. But a plus 19 goal differential and doing it being basically a 500 team at home. Can Arizona keep this up?
You know, we've talked about this a few times, Don, and every time I go, oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
Hold on. And, you know, but the fact of the matter is that they're getting the job done. And it doesn't matter how they're doing it, but they're doing it well. And I'm almost more looking at it, you know, and then they, you know, you bring that addition of Taylor Hall. And so obviously, you know, this is a team that is, you know, ready to make the playoffs, and that's what their management believes. And I don't see what's going to stop them from doing that. So, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they're going to make the playoffs if they continue on this way. And, you know, you look at the Pacific Division, and, you know, some people have their own thoughts about it. They don't think it's that strong. But I think there's a lot of teams playing very well from that division. You look at what Vancouver's doing. You know, you look at even Edmonton right now, the way that they're rolling. They're going to be an interesting player at the deadline to see if they're buyers or sellers, depending on what happens here in the next month. So I give all full credit to Arizona. I'm not quite sure exactly how they're doing it, but they're doing it, and they've got, you know, some really good young players and, you know, some veteran players on there. And they're not depending on just one person. And I think that's, you know, maybe the best part of it. But, you know, everybody's just chipping in and doing their job.
All right, you ready for some
and
tweets?
Maybe that's Tockett. Like for
Tockett, McLean. I mean, you do have a lot of experience behind that bench.
Yeah. It just for so many years they were on the market. We didn't know if they were going to stay in Arizona. It's always been just such a mess there. And now suddenly there's a little bit of calm, and look what they're managing to produce. So good for them, and you know it's great for the fan base there.
Irene gets started off, and this is the $64,000 question, right? Why are the Sharks so bad? It just seems to me like the effort is not there. The sum of the individual talent is too great to have a team this bad. The coaching change didn't help. Do you think they need a new voice behind the bench? Maybe Laviolette. You know, the coaching change didn't matter. And I like Bob Bugner as a coach, too. I think he did a decent job in Florida for a bit, but clearly it wasn't a coaching issue, right? This team is just as bad, if not worse, after they let DeBoer go.
No, it wasn't DeBoer. It's the room. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of talk about that room. I think the loss of Joe Pavelski is huge, and I don't think people realize how much he kept that room in check. Joe Thornton is another one that obviously has always been a strong voice for them, but he's an older player now, and he doesn't have that room the way he used to. You look at the fact that Carlson is underachieving. Burns isn't playing Burns-like. There's just something wrong there, and I think I know that San Jose fans don't want to hear it, and they've been, you know, they've been such a contender for so many years and so consistent. But I think it's time that if they are where they are when it comes to the deadline, it's time to move some of their names, and it's time to start again, because I really think it's the room. I don't think I see a group of players that are playing, one, for themselves and also for their team and also for their coach and also for their organization. And the more and more I hear about what's going on there, I can't get past that.
No, you can't. And then that usually explains things, right? When a team's got a ton of talent, they're not achieving, they're not responding to the coach, what's going inside that room and what did they lose. And Pavelski, that's a big loss, not just on the ice, but in that room. And listen, you think there'd be a lot of leadership there with Thornton and Marlowe and Couture. I mean, there's a lot of guys that have been there a long time, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're the right voice for the room. And maybe things are getting a little old, a little stale. And maybe a massive change there. Wilson's been the general manager there forever. I'm not calling for his job. I'm just saying that you can't always blame the coach, right, Leah? Sometimes you got to look beyond who's behind the bench and just look at the way it's run, how it's put together, the collection of players as a whole, and just see if it's the right combination.
Well, absolutely. And I mean, you know, you talk about Wilson, David Poyle's in the same pot right now in Nashville. You've made two coaching changes in your time as GM. The next change is you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and that's the same thing with Wilson. You pulled your trigger on it. So if this doesn't fix it, then, you know, it's him or you have to make the decision. And it's a tough one at the deadline this year, and it's time to do it. You know, you have some players with talent. Go out and let's start again, because it's not working in San Jose, and there's no reason why it shouldn't be.
Tom asked a question to us on Monday, Leah, EJ Raddick was my guest, about the puck hitting the camera in the championship game at World Juniors. So he just wanted to get the Canadian perspective from you on that call.
Oh, it's a missed call. It's plain and simple. It's a missed call. It should have been a delay of game. You know, I don't necessarily believe it would have changed the outcome of it, but you just don't know, right? And that's really too bad. But, you know, how many times do we go over this? People are human. Errors happen. You know, the refs themselves did not know, like the broadcast did, that camera is located outside of the glass.
Right.
And if you think about standing on the ice and looking up at that, it does look like it's right there. They showed a bunch of different views on it up here on TSN on the games, and because it was their camera. And, you know, but it clearly is outside of the glass, so it should have been a delay of game penalty. So I understand why the Russians, would be upset. But when you look at what was going on in that game, the way Canada was playing, the comeback they had done, I don't think there was anything stopping those kids from taking that gold medal.
Forever TH, what players from the Red Wings would you consider to be worth a trade at the deadline? Eisenman needs a big move or two to continue the rebuild the right way. There's talent there. There's some talent there. There's a lot of skilled players there that I think teams would want. But the question is, and I don't know the answer to this, maybe you do, like who's part of the long term and who are pieces? Is Mantha part of the long term? Is Larkin part of the long term? Is Athanasiou part of the long term? How does Yzerman view these guys? As pieces to the puzzle when this is complete? Or pieces he needs to throw away in order to bring in the right picks and the right players back?
And I think that's exactly it, is that, you know, Steve Yzerman has just arrived back in Detroit, and this season was looked at by the general manager that he was going to evaluate. I don't necessarily know if you're going to see any major moves from Yzerman at the deadline, because, you know, obviously Detroit is where Detroit is. They're going to get a high draft pick. He wanted to evaluate not just the players, but the coaches, the trainers, everyone, and he wanted this season to do this. And quite frankly, the fact that they are where they are in the standings is allowing him the ability to go, you know what, we are where we are. It's the season is a write-off. I'm going to evaluate everything, and I'm going to make changes more so in, you know, say free agency or going forward with trades. But there is talent there. I think there are some players that are untouchable. I would say Dylan Larkin being one of them. Anthony Mantha, I think, is a part of the long plan. There's some other players that, you know, perhaps maybe they might want out. I don't think Mike Green is going to be around forever. I don't know if Darren Helm is going to be around forever. Some guys who've been there long-term, won cups, but we'll wait and see. But I really don't think you're going to see Yzerman do anything at the deadline besides maybe collect draft picks. He might get rid of a couple players for draft picks, but I'm talking about second, third-round draft picks just to stock his cupboards in Grand Rapids. But I think this is all about evaluation for the new general manager in Detroit.
Yeah, a lot of work to do there, but they've had moments. They beat Montreal last night. They had a nice win against Boston, if you remember, earlier in the season. And I'm going to get a chance. They got a home-and-home coming up with against the Rangers. I'll get to call one of the games over in Detroit, so I'm looking forward to just seeing them. But, you know, the record is what it is, right? And it's been a while now that this team has been out of it after, what was it, 17, 18 20. Consecutive years? What, 20, right?
I think it was like 27 years.
It was a long time.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what I mean. This is just... this is the cycle. I mean, Detroit was so consistent for so long, and their system and the way they let their players in the AHL season before they bring them up. I mean, Darren Helm won a cup with the Detroit Red Wings in the 2000s, and then he started the next season back in the AHL for like 40 games before they brought him back up. Ken Holland was notorious for letting his players bake, and they still do that in Grand Rapids. They are not in a rush in Detroit, and I think there will be patience and evaluation taken by Yzerman.
Yeah, so it should be a lot of fun. I'm glad we're back in the fold here. The holidays were great, but it's good to be able to talk to you once a week. And I think there's a lot of things that are wide open. You know, as you said, there are 3-4 teams in the Eastern Conference that I think that can come out. When you look at the Western Conference, I think Colorado's great. St. Louis is great. I think Vegas is a team that's kind of been there, done that. I mean, we might have a conversation where there could be 7 or 8 teams that can legitimately lift the cup in June. And I think that's good for any sport.
It's great. And, you know, it's what amazes me right now, and it's just being around the Jets dressing room, is, you know, they're sitting right now the second wild card spot, and they really look at it like the playoff stretch is now. I mean, every game is so important right now for every team in the West because of how close everything is and how strong the conference is. So it's going to be, you know, not just like the last month and a half after the trade deadline. I think the playoff hunt starts now for the NHL.
Winnipeg's just got to do a better job at home. That's too cool of a building to struggle.
It is, but you know what? You look at the injuries they've had. I mean, besides Pittsburgh, they've lost the most man games this season. And, you know, the fact that I can't even just even believe that they're in a playoff spot and have been for the entire season. That still blows my mind because I didn't expect that. So I'm of the other side of it where I can't believe they're doing what they're doing with what they have.
And then that'll be fun tonight. There's a lot of talent on the ice in Toronto when the Jets and the Leafs play. So that should be a lot of fun.
It will be.
Leah, we'll talk to you next week.
All right, Don. Thanks so much.
All right, that's Leah Hextall. Does a great job every Wednesday. Got her back in the fold now that the holidays are over. We mentioned the Jets and the Leafs tonight, 7:30 start. Also at 7:30, the Capitals and the Flyers. You know, it's funny what Leah said about don't sleep on the Capitals. Maybe they're the best team in the Eastern Conference. I asked the same question to Dave Maloney when I was calling the game last night, and he felt that the Capitals are the best team in the Eastern Conference. And that's saying something when you look at what Tampa's done recently, when you look at what Boston's done as a whole this year. But the Capitals sit in first place. They've been held off the Islanders, who have just been incredible this season. So Caps 39-5, and the Flyers just trying to hang on to that playoff spot in the last game tonight. Stars and the Kings from L.A. All right, Friday, always a big day. We'll get right back to it with our top five teams of the week. We'll do that, set you up for the weekend. Want to get in touch with me? Best way to do that is at Don LaGreca, hashtag Game Misconduct. We'll talk to you again on Friday. This was the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct.
Thanks for listening to the Game Misconduct Podcast. Looking for more Don LaGreca? Hear him on the Michael K. Show weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York and worldwide on the ESPN app. And don't forget to subscribe to the Game Misconduct Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.